Okay, welcome to August.
Hey, it's our first fall podcast. Yay! All right, I'm Joe Harrington, Round Rock leader and Pflugerville flag.
And I'm Sean Shapiro with the Cedar Park Leander Statesman. And our special guest today, who is more of a featured guest as opposed to...
Yeah, he's kind of like, in like old like 1990 Saturday Night Live, he used to have like, they always said... guest starring, but he was a guest star like every week.
Yeah, every single.
And then after like 3 years, they were like, "Okay, we'll make him part of the cast." Yes. Come on, Tim Meadows.
So
basically, if there was an opening credits, I would be at least somewhat featured in it.
You'd be the third guy in the opening credits after the 30-second clip of Joe and I, and then there'd be about 5 seconds of guest starring Chris Dukes.
And I turn around and face the camera like over my shoulder.
Exactly, like okay. In the Saturday Night Live opening skit, you'd be like, I don't know, eating falafel in downtown, like, after they had, like, a minute of just showing Hustle and Bustle New York.
Yeah.
Then they go to there.
Yeah, that
No, we're just kidding. This is Chris Dukes, and we'd love to have him on the show.
Chris Dukes with the Bastrop Advertiser and Smithville Times.
And this is our first fall podcast, so you can check us out every Thursday. Mm-hmm. We'll be speaking the gospel of high school sports. Next week, we're going to have old Butch Hart, hopefully on the show.
Hopefully. Still, Feeler's been put out to his booking agency.
Butch is a mighty fine guest to have. We'll be talking about volleyball. But, fellas, we should probably talk about football. And before we do previews, we're going to talk about just some of the rule changes and just some of the topics that you can talk about every year. Around this time, safety measures and stuff like that.
Really a perfect time for it, as a lot of those questions about it were answered this past week. The coaches' school by the Texas High School Coaches Association was up in Fort Worth this week, and there was, of course, with that they have the yearly THSCA All-Star Game. But the main thing there, it's really a networking opportunity for coaches, and they also go over a lot of the UIL goes over a lot of rules there. So really a perfect time to go over some of those changes that will be seen with in football. This fall.
Yeah. Well, the big one, and that's one that's going through high school and college, and have they done it in the NFL? I don't think so.
No, I think this year the NCAA is kind of their testing ground for
and
that.
That's targeting mm-hmm. and throwing out. And what's weird about this is, like, normally I think if you get thrown out of a game, I think this is for all sports, you get suspended the next game, and then you have, like, a hearing. Mm-hmm. We've all been around high school football coaches. The refs have got to really watch out what they do, or else we're going to have a lock jam on Monday mornings.
And the interesting thing about this one, though, is there will not be an automatic suspension for the next game. That is, unlike the NCAA rule right now, where I believe, and I don't know the letter of the law on the NCAA rule, but I believe the NCAA rule is you get thrown out for the next game.
Actually, I was reading up on it a little bit, and if you get thrown out of the second half of a game, then you're suspended for the first half of the following game. So you sit out one full game as the penalty.
Okay.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. Well, in high school, there will be, if you are called for targeting and tossed out of the game in the second half, you will not be suspended for the next week's game.
But don't you feel like this, it's not going to really happen that much to players? You kind of mentioned it. It's going to happen that coaches are going to argue the call, and I could see them getting in trouble, but I can't imagine any refs actually throwing coaches out of games.
Yeah.
It's kind of like maybe like the sit down rule in high school basketball.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me just about high school is the fact where yes, games are videotaped, but there's not official video review, so it's a lot of responsibility and pressure for a judgment decision to put in a ref's hands where something where you know how fast the play goes out of the corner of his eye, what could be a quote-unquote, an illegal hit that would be targeting, to make that snap decision to throw a kid out. That's a lot of pressure to put on a referee. And there, what gets even worse, where if they make that call, and then all of a sudden you have a coach bearing down on your throat for the rest of the game. So,
and let's be frank, not to like throw a lot of refs under, but these aren't college-level refs. We all know that the reffing in high school sports in general can be up and down.
I mean, the perfect example of that is we all remember the infamous Seahawks-Packers game last year, that those referees, the head referee who made that call was reffing high school, Texas high school football the next Friday.
Yeah. And so what I say is you're putting a judgment call in the hands of guys that sometimes don't make normal calls very well. So I imagine how it will be is we won't see a lot of those calls even if it happens. I imagine that a lot of things will slide.
I think it's going to take a real blatant hit for someone to actually get tossed, because I think a referee doesn't want to make the call where it possibly be wrong. And that's what a lot of people don't know about the when you look at high school reffing, coaches actually have control over who can ref their games.
Mm-hmm.
And if you alienate one coach, that's fine. But if you alienate enough coaches, you're going to be on everyone's do not. I don't know what the official call of it is, but before the season starts, football coaches, I think they get a list of six names.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Six, maybe five, maybe six, I'm not sure, where they can send to the refs association and say, these individuals cannot ref my game. And they're blacklisted from ever refing those teams' games.
Yeah.
And that type of, so that requires the refs to have a somewhat positive relationship with coaches.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting dynamic. And I don't think we're going to see a lot in the regular season. May see some in non-district, but like you said, once we get into district play, we're not going to see a lot of these out because a lot of the refs are the same refs every week, and those refs are going to get to know how these teams play. And if one team one team that really plays physical every year is Stony Point. A ref is going to see that Stony Point, that's just how they play, and it's not really targeting. It's just there's a lot of athletic kids that are going to hit, they're going to be big hitters. And those refs that saw them 2 weeks ago are probably going to know that. And I think they're going to be hesitant to throw kids out for that.
The kids who actually I think you might see actually get thrown out aren't going to be the star players and the starters, if you think about it. I think the kids who might get thrown out might be those kids who are in the game in the fourth quarter of a garbage time game. The kid that hasn't played a lot and all of a sudden has all the adrenaline pumping and has a big wide open hit. And then
let's be completely honest. These calls are going to happen most in special teams.
Yes,
it's high school football.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the unsportsmanlike hits and violent hits and stuff like that happen on special teams. That's where it's going to be. It's not going to happen on fourth down.
No,
we'll have them on fourth down. Those are special teams things. But it's not going to happen on like second and five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, but without throwing anyone under the bus, which team you think is going to be the first one to have an issue of all of our teams that we cover that's going to have some type of targeting call?
Which team is going to be the first one to have an issue? Ooh.
Because my district, I feel like this is going to happen most in the secondary. It usually happens in my district. District 16-5A is loaded with hard-hitting safeties. So I can imagine that possibly someone from my district is going to have an issue with this within the first week.
Yeah, I could see that too. It's
we should mention we're doing the podcast in the what should we say the pod bunker?
Pod bunker, yeah. Apparently, the Statesman has a specially built pod bunker.
Yeah, specially built pod bunker.
if you imagine that the escape hatch in Lost and kind of update it maybe 5 to 10 years, that's pretty much what this place looks like.
I'm pretty sure the soundproofing stuff has maybe some asbestos in here, but it's definitely got 1970s feel. But no, seriously, what team someone will have problems?
Would it start with Cedar and then with Ridge by any chance?
I don't know. I don't know. It's not going to be Cedar Ridge. I think it's going to have. It's probably most likely this is going to be a high profile type safety that is going to go across the middle and knock a kid out because he's going across the middle in high school football, and that's where we're going to see it. So guys like Ramirez of Round Rock and Chance Waz. I mean these are hard hitting guys. I feel like that these are the type of kids that might have issues at some point. Not saying that they will. Not saying that they target kids, but good players hit hard over the middle. That's what makes them great safeties, especially at the high school level. And usually that gets coached out of them in the college level. The high school level, you just want to see a kid hit a guy hard and play hard the whole game. And I can see it happening to one of those type of players.
I could see it happening in a game that Joe and I have both mentioned is an underrated game in Week 0.
Oh, yeah. McNeil and Vandegrift.
I could see it happening in that game. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully these kids aren't targeting because it is dangerous. But, I mean, what's the difference between, like I said, targeting and just hitting across over the middle?
Right. A fantastic play and targeting is the line is really thin. It seems like the definition is still being drawn out.
We all know what probably everybody's favorite moment of a high school game is when there's such a hard hit that you can hear the whole stadium go, "Oh,
yeah."
I don't think that's going to change, and I don't think refs are really going to call it.
One of the things I think that with the targeting rule that I've noticed, I mean, just reading about it, is those blindside blocks are apparently borderline targeting, and they're gonna call some of those. That's gonna
really?
Be really interesting and really those happen in every game, and those
blindside blocks, those are also some of everyone's favorite play on special teams. When one kid gets
Well, and also who doesn't like the offensive tackle that just blindsides a cornerback?
Yeah,
that happens all the time, and it's just high school football. And that's why I mean, like I said, I don't think it's going to be called that much because I think the refs are just going to let a lot of things pass.
And the refs that do call it are, you know, the coaches are going to know who's going to be who are the guys that are actually making that call.
Yeah,
and who are either rightfully making that call or maybe overzealously calling.
I think every coach will enter this season knowing which ref likes to make himself part of the game.
Yeah,
and that's going to happen. You know, like I said, hopefully none of our teams have this issue, and hopefully, you know, there's just a lot of good clean hits.
Yeah. Another, not as much targeting, another rule that goes into effect starting August 12th for those teams that had spring, and I guess August 5th for Hendrickson?
Hendrickson starts August 5th. Smithville starting August 5th?
Smithville does start August 5th.
Bastrop and
Cedar Creek both start them the week after.
Okay.
And this has actually become more blown out than it ever... The 90-minute contact rule in practice each week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this, just talking to coaches, this was blown out way more. Everyone who first looked at it and didn't read what the actual rule said was really worried about it and how they were changing the game. But what it really comes down to, it, and I've talked to a bunch of the coaches in the area I cover, that they're not even coming close to 90 minutes of full contact to the ground tackling like that rule prohibits.
Yeah.
And most teams are already under that. I mean, for instance... one coach I spoke to today said we probably do maybe 30 minutes of to-the-ground tackling during a week. And that's still an hour under.
And frankly, a lot of coaches that are doing spring ball get their heavy hitting in then.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's always the exceptions. There's always going to be teams that just hit every practice. But, for instance, Westwood, they hardly go full pad.
Mm-hmm.
In this summer. They're doing shields, you know, shoulder pads and helmets. But they go full go all summer, all spring long.
Mm-hmm.
So they got all their hitting then. And I think it seems like a lot of coaches are going to do that, because if you've covered a spring practice and then gone out and covered two-a-days, it's kind of a lot more physical and intense in spring.
Yeah, it's
right?
Two completely different animals.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like and this was different when I was in high school football in Ohio. You know, August was just the hell month. I mean,
you were
just full go. Now it seems like May is your really hard push. And then once you get to summer, these teams, they're working off footwork. They may be working on pad levels and stuff like that, but they're mainly working on plays and formations and stuff.
Yeah, most of the coaches I've talked to, the only full contact, what would actually, when you would have to start the stopwatch to start counting up to 90 minutes.
It's Vandegrift.
No, multiple teams. I've talked to multiple teams about it. Really, the only thing, when they go goal line, because they're going to go full to the ground during goal line, and that's maybe 15 minutes in a week.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll run a segment of 5 to 10 plays of going live and a drive. And we all know five to ten plays, that's maybe 5 minutes at most if you're...
Well, I mean, if you look at it, goal line, you need to go full go. There's just no way to simulate it without it. Team drills, I think you need to go full go. And then two-minute drill, you need to go full go. Other than that, I mean, you can do a lot of walkthroughs. You can do almost every football drill without full pads as long as you're not hitting. And most of these teams are going to tack on dummies and shoots and sleds anyway.
Yeah, and the coaches know who can go by the end of spring football. They know who their hitters are. They've already figured a lot of that stuff out. And by the time you get to August, it's putting in plays. A lot of teams start preparing for that first game or that first district game that right there, right off the bat.
It really goes back to having the athletic period, because these coaches know these players incredibly well. And they do that because they can spend an hour to an hour and a half with them every day in the off season, and then in the summer they have them up there like every other day. So they know these kids as well as possible. So I don't think they have to really have them go full go. They know what they can do.
Yeah.
I mean, anything else? Well, obviously, the other huge issue that always comes up is the heat.
Yeah.
And the water stuff. I think that Texas and these coaches have really grown over probably the past 15 years of handling that. I don't see that as an issue. Again, yeah. I think it goes back to why we have to wake up at 7:30 in the morning. Chris and I have to wake up at 7:30 in the morning to go on Monday.
Yeah.
To go to practices.
Right. Yeah. Because some teams are doing it earlier and earlier to try to beat that heat, especially with these summer workouts. I know Bastrop is reporting at 7 a.m. for their first 2-a-days. Smithfield's reporting at 6:30 a.m. for their first 2-a-days. I mean, they're getting this done before noon, before a lot of that heat really becomes an issue. And the safety when it comes to heat has just grown exponentially since I was a mediocre football player in the late 90s.
The two train of thoughts here is you can go super early in the morning, which I think most coaches do because it's starting to get your players into the high school mindset.
Or you can go starting at 8 o'clock at night.
And that's what a lot of teams in the Hill Country would do when we were at the Daily Times, because frankly, a lot of these kids had jobs in the summer, so they would go at night. But here, they knock it out early in the morning.
And, I mean, if you're one of those people who believes that your body gets trained to do certain things, I mean, practicing at 8 o'clock at night, that's when you're going to play your football games. I mean, it kind of makes sense to acclimate those kids to being ready for that kind of activity.
And we all know that there's not a coach in the country that's telling these kids after practice, don't drink any water, drink soy sauce. Go get some Chinese food. Stay up all night. Nobody's telling these kids, so I think they'll be okay as far as the dehydration stuff.
Yeah, and player nutrition is something that's come a long, long way in the last 10 years, too. I mean, I remember playing football and the coach stopping at McDonald's, before games. That never happens anymore.
Yeah, we'd always have food waiting for us after games. I remember that. When I played / watched football, frankly, when your option at left guard is a 5'8" out of shape Joe Harrington or a 6'5" kid who went on to play at Eastern Carolina, I think they went with the 6'5" kid. But you better watch out in practice because I would cut you. I made no bones about it. I was a dirty player in high school.
Yeah, that was kind of our team motto back in our 2A football games. We didn't win a lot of games, but there was a lot of in between play activity.
When I was on practice squad my senior year, I purposely held all of our defensive linemen because I knew that they were going to get held in the regular season. God knows I couldn't block them. I played on, I guess it would be considered a 5A school in Ohio. It was a D1 school. So. Cincinnati Anderson. Redskins. Well, let's go around and we'll talk about some of the stuff we're working on. for next week.
Well, another rule change that we wanted to touch on. Let's start with
Chris. Oh, okay. We got one more rule change.
Because there's a rule change that doesn't impact any of the 4A or 5A schools.
Oh, but is this a Smithfield Tigers?
This rule is change? A Smithfield
this
Tigers
may be.
Rule change.
Wow.
Good old District 26.
Finally.
Good old District
3A. Yes! I covered 3A.
Did you?
Yeah. What'd first you season. Ingram Tom Moore was a 3A.
Aren't they a 2A now?
They're a 2A.
They're 2A now, but when I've covered them, they were 3A.
Oh, they must have added to their 28-game losing streak.
That was it. They didn't beat Wimberley.
The Ingram Tom Moore, if they were a 3A school, would have a better chance of making the playoffs this year because 3A is expanding to four-team playoff, which impacts state championship week as well as everything else because the 3A state championship was always a week earlier before. And now all the state championships are going to take place the same week. They're all going to be at Cowboy Stadium. It's going to be, I mean, they're going to just add a couple more games. But
well, not officially at Cowboy Stadium yet.
Oh.
That's not officially finalized, but it will be in North Texas.
Ah.
Can we just make the state championship weekend like a statewide holiday?
It should be.
It should be.
Yeah.
I agree. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these districts have four, five, six teams, so... There's going to be districts where one team sits out, no teams sit out.
Yeah, I remember I think Dave Campbell's there's like four or five teams right now that they projected could go 0-10 and still be in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I covered a team back in 2A where the Center Point Pirates, and they were in a 4-team district. So if you lost two games in district, you're done. If you lost, if you had at least one win, you were going to go to the playoffs, and if not, you had to coin flip. So I remember covering their last game. I think they lost the game, and yet they were like meeting together to coin flip for the playoffs, and they won it. So it's just interesting how it all works out. But yeah, but I think good.
I can't. A lot of people think, you know, I mean, I've been reading a lot of comments on websites and stuff like that that say, you know, why don't you just give them all a medal? Why don't you just give them all a ribbon? Why don't you, you know, I mean, that mentality. But to me, it's more football, and more football is good.
Isn't the one positive a lot of people point out, too, the fact that you don't – I know a lot of teams didn't like getting that first round bye.
Yeah, and there were some weird first round matchups. I mean, because of the Division I, Division II thing. LaGrange last year had to play Lavernia. Two district champions played each other in the first round because they were both Division I and the other two schools had gone Division II. So, I mean, it really is going to even things out in the playoffs.
So, just to give everyone the background information, so it used to be Division I was just, there were only one team would go to Division I,
and the
correct?
Other two would go to Division II, yeah.
Well, and another thing, having covered Ingram when they were in 3A, I mean, sometimes there's a huge difference in the numbers of the program that'll cause teams to just stink in 3A and never make the playoffs. So, like, Ingram Tom Moore had 2A numbers but was in a 3A district, and they just couldn't compete.
Right. And,
so
and
I think it's more competitive now.
And the haves and have-nots in 3A, the difference is a lot more than you see at the 4A and the 5A level. I mean... Just there's such a discrepancy between the small 3A programs and the bigger 3A programs, which is why next year they're splitting into two divisions like 1A and 2A do now.
If Smithville was to make the playoffs, what?
They would go to Division II.
Division II?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that needs to have like a nickname. The 3As and 2As and 1As need to be like the small city bulls, right? Even though some of them are from small cities.
Yeah.
Some of them are, you know, some of them are from, like, suburbs of Beaumont.
Yeah, and I think the biggest difference we always said between 2A and 3A programs is a 2A town doesn't have a Dairy Queen. A 3A town has a Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
That's how we distinguish between the two.
Well, now we can get back.
Yes.
We've gone through the rule changes.
The 3A, yeah. The 3A detour.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? It's more power to you.
It's informative.
You know, I was informing one of our guys. They asked me the other day about all the ACN schools. And he had Georgetown list. And he was like, well, knock out Georgetown and add Smithville. And they're like, you guys cover Smithville? And I was like, damn straight we cover Smithville.
We cover the heck out of Smithville. That's what we do.
Well, we'll go around and talk about some of the stories we're working on for next week's or next editions. John, why don't you tell us what you're working on for CPL?
Well, we've got the kind of touched on it enough already. Just doing something quick about the story about how the non-impact of the practice rule and really putting that out there and explaining to people what that actually means from the coach's perspective, because you still have people who say, oh, they're limiting contact to 90 minutes a week. They're taking tackling out of the game. Well, that's not what happened. We touched on that already, but actually that story will be in print next week. And then we're also putting together our nice big two-page volleyball season preview with help from our friend Butch Hart, who's already sent, as of recording this Wednesday, in 12 hours, he turned out 3 stories already. So
that's what he does.
Look forward to reading everything you need to know about Leander School District Volleyball next week.
Starting in Saturday's issue, is the last one before we really jump into volleyball and jump in off the deep end. But we're gonna do an interview with the new Bastrop volleyball coach, and then we're gonna continue what we've been doing in our partnership with the Pflugerville Flag.
Pflugerville Flag, yeah.
we're breaking down position by position the best players in 17-4A. So you can look for that. We're gonna be going into defensive linemen and linebackers on in the Saturday issue, which will come out, I'm guessing, in the Thursday issue of the Flag.
Wednesday's issues of the Flag
Wednesday
will have
issue.
That.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So today we did DBs, and then we're also doing it in District 16-5A. Yeah, that's what we had that in.
Okay.
Well, what's going on in Smithville?
Well, down in Smithville, obviously next week they're starting 2-A-Days. So next week we'll be talking with Coach Wayne Childs, and you know, kind of doing a pre-team preview. Mm-hmm. Plus, next week we'll also be. We've been doing way too early football previews, and next week is the Smithville Tigers, so we look forward to that.
Well, yeah, and we should make a note that Chris and I's continuing partnership. We're going to churn out a District 17-4A all-sports preview in 2 weeks.
That's the plan.
So we have Butch wrote some previews for us, too, and then we'll have volleyball, and we'll also have our football stuff in there, along with kind of the wrap-up of our position guys.
And don't forget about cross-country, too.
Cross-country and tennis.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, don't forget about cross-country and tennis. And sent those deadline assignments out last week. Hopefully old Tim Sampson, my reporter, can get on that. For the Round Rock Leader this week, obviously continuing coverage of the Round Rock Express, the AAA team. But we're breaking down linebackers and defensive tackles on our District 16-5A position breakdown. Those will also be in the Flag. And obviously, we're doing the same. We're doing position breakdowns for volleyball. And we're holding our volleyball season preview to August, I believe it is the 15th. For our special section for the Leader, we'll have non-football sports preview. So we'll have volleyball, tennis, and cross country there, and then 2 weeks later, football. Mm-hmm. So we got a busy month ahead of us, and also in the Flag, that's giant that is Hendrickson is starting. I would venture to say they're probably the most high-profile Central Texas team that's going to start practicing on Monday. Everybody else did spring.
I wonder how many other schools that could do spring ball didn't do spring ball in the area. Obviously, none of our schools. I just wondered how many. We don't know enough about the Austin ISD schools. We may have to ask Danny Davis about that. But I wonder how many actually took the Hendrickson route.
Yeah, it just goes back to they had a lot of baseball players and track. I mean, you can't really do spring ball if Samaje Perrine's running sprints in track.
Well, I think
that's it. Yeah,
this is usually, you know, we have to contain ourselves.
Well, I think the time frame on this podcast was an element of planning. We actually planned things out slightly better.
We've still got 30, usually we go about an hour, but now it's like 30 minutes.
Yes.
What?
Well, I'm sure next week we'll make up for it when we talk to Butch about volleyball.
Volleyball yeah. guru, yes. Butch Hart.
Which, by the way, we should mention that volleyball two-a-days and training and tryouts
start Monday.
On Monday, along with tennis two-a-days. Yeah, they do them. And cross-country.
Yes.
So all that stuff is starting on Monday. And then you just have these sleeping giants of football.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so visit us at Round Rock at rrleader.com and flugableflag.com.
And cplstatesman.com.
BassDropAdvertiser.com and smithvilletimes.com.
And we now have the fancy way of embedding this right into the site. So that's what you're probably there already.
And now with our pod cave, we could probably try to work in some music.
Possibly. Look forward to that addition in the future.
We need to take a picture. We need to take a picture of the pod cave.
Yeah.
Put it on Twitter.
And put it on Twitter, but also put it on the feed. There,
I
so
agree.
People can see the pod cave.
So they can imagine sitting in here with us listening.
Yeah. There's a nice lamp there with an oven.
Yeah. And a VCR. Oh, no, it's a five disc changer.
But there is a cassette. Some sort of cassette playback device right down there as well.
Yeah, so we could have someone bring their mixtape next week.
You know, before we
with all the songs recorded off the radio.
Before we officially go, this is something I just thought of. Let's end it with one prediction between now and the next podcast. Chris, go ahead.
One prediction? Sports related?
Sports, pop culture. Do whatever you want, my friend. One prediction that'll happen over the next week.
One prediction of something that will occur over the next week. I don't want to go first. I feel like I'm put on the spot here.
Shapiro?
Just because it's been happening almost every week throughout the summer with LISD, I will either have... I'm predicting there may be some coaching change. Just because it's happened every week during the summer.
What was the coaching change this past week?
This past week, the Leander wrestling coach left to go coach at Lake Travis.
Hmm.
Oh, really? Well, he's a football coach, too.
Yeah, and apparently his children are in the Lake Travis school system. And so Lake Travis adding a varsity wrestling program brought him over there. That would be Leander wrestling coach Kevin Smith.
Nice, good dude. Yeah. My prediction of what will happen over the next week is my beloved Cincinnati Bengals will not have any injuries.
Mine's almost a guarantee. I will spend one more quality weekend with my wife before I once again leave her for the next 7 months and join the football and other sport covering world.
Oh, and a group prediction is we will all have some type of deadline issue.
Yes.
We'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, I'm Joe Harrington for Sean Shapiro and Chris Dukes.
Adios.
I'm listening.